Richie, I want to start out just getting a little bit of your story. You come from a line of pastors, yeah. but when did faith sort of become your own?
Well, I probably ought to comment on the line of pastors, so because what we're talking about here, when we talk about the future, I do want people who listen and watch to understand I'm coming from deep in the belly of the beast. I mean, my dad was a pastor, my two older brothers, my sister's married to pastors, my dad's dad, my dad's older brother with pastors. It just goes on and on. At least one member of my family's been clergy all the way back to a chaplain of the Continental Regulars. So we've contributed deeply to whatever problems the North American church is facing. Faith for me, although I grew up in church and I was a good kid and I followed all of the, I went and I actually listened to my dad and paid attention. I would say, like many people, there was a childhood expression of it where I signaled, yeah, I'm in. It's a little different than the tradition I grew up in, than some others. But for me, it was high school when it really became personal. I had an older brother who got involved with Campus Crusade. And that was a big turning point. I mean, he was kind of like a Joshua in a sense, to me. He was 7 years older than me, but he always looked after me. We shared a bedroom. And so he was in college and he got this and he brought it home. And he just started talking about faith in a way in relationship with Jesus. It was very different from a relationship with the church. I joined the church. I didn't necessarily profess a faith in Jesus. Yeah. I mean, I just signed up to be a good club member and thought that was good enough, but he made it very personal and about Jesus, and I'm very grateful for that.
And then you became a pastor. Did you work in your adult life before becoming a pastor, or kind of like college, seminary?
Yeah, I was going to go into politics, something honorable like that. So I went to college, university, political science was my background. But in my junior and senior years, I had a pretty profound call experience. And it was going to take that to shake me because I really wanted to go into public service. It was honorable then. But my call experience was pretty profound. I had no choice. My professors, when I went back to school in the fall, were just, dismayed. They had me lined up for Fulbright School or whatever else in the diplomatic corps or running their Senate campaigns or whatever. But so when I told them, no, I'm going into the ministry, that was a shock to them.
Yeah. And so you were a pastor for how long?
Yeah. So I went straight from college into seminary. I was on staff all the way through college. I mean, my first church role, and there's a story behind that, but I was, I started school in 2 days as a freshman. 2 days later, I was on the church staff as a part-time youth director and worship leader. We didn't call it worship leader then, the music director. The oldest kid in my youth group was 6 months younger than me, so I made her an associate. It was a great experience. I was at that church all the way through college. Then in seminary, I was part-time at some church. So, I've been in ministry ever since I was a freshman in college. Then went full-time when I was doing my, when I moved to doctoral work, then I also went full-time because I could work around the schedule a little better. So 20 years of local church experience. Mm-hmm. 10 of that was in staff roles. Whether it was music or youth, I was associate, education, missions. I couldn't do anything very well, so they kept moving me around. They thought, surely this boy will catch fire somewhere. We could see some promise. So I woke up one day and finally realized, the senior pastor makes all the money. What am I doing? So I decided I'll be a pastor, but no one would have me, so I had to go start a church. So I was there 11 years. So 20 years in local church. Then I went to a denominational role, which I'm embarrassed to admit because, you'd go speak in these churches. And my wife would call me, well, how'd it go this morning? And I'm driving back home. And I said, well, I announced the end of the world, and they asked me to come back. You know, I mean, I was a terrible communicator, apparently, because they thanked me for coming and, you know, glad to see. But 13 years, and that was in a leadership development role for the about 2,200 churches. Had about 10,000 staff, pastors and other staff roles that I did leadership development mm-hmm. within. That was 13 years.
Had you always been sort of future-oriented and analyzing the culture? Did that come out of your poli-sci background, or that develop over time?
No, I've always been bent that way. Mm-hmm. And if you follow like a Gallup Strengths Finder or anything that traces your stuff, that's a part of who I am. So I've always been just kind of, I haven't had to work at it really hard. I try to stay informed. I'm not a data-driven futurist. I don't mm-hmm. study charts and graphs and try to, you know, I'm more of an intuitive futurist. If I listen closely to people and I watch news or just listen, you know, I've somehow connect some dots that maybe others don't see. But I find people fascinating, so I pay mm-hmm. attention.
And then somewhere along the lines there, you started more writing, speaking, and consulting.
Yeah.
Did that come out of the denominational stuff, and eventually you branched off?
I didn't write while I was a pastor. You're right. It was when I was in the denominational role that I started putting pen to some things. And it was always in a leadership. I've always worked with leaders. That's been my mm-hmm. call. And it's also the point of leverage in many cases. Certainly more so even when I started, because leaders were still setting agenda. One of the things that's happened in the church and in our world is the shift to more democratization of ideas and people's access. I think that has been a challenge for many pastors, actually. People used to look to them for leadership almost mm-hmm. in multiple areas, and now they come formed with their own opinions and have their own sources, and then you have a different animal that you're dealing with. But we can talk about that later. But yeah, the writing started when I started working with multiple. What I never wanted to do was write out of one experience. Because you can tell when you read someone and they've had one experience and they tend to imperialize that experience, you know, to everybody, I think that's not as helpful as when you have multiple. And so when I started, you know, a little more engaged with a lot of folks and could get a lot of information, I started writing.
Yeah, and early on, leadership development and then the missional sort of conversation, which sort of bridged into more of the kingdom conversation you're
yeah.
part of now.
Well, and if I were going to say my life mission, I would say it, you know, very succinctly. You know, my call is to work for the revitalization of the North American church. I probably would add an addendum to that and say the Western church, because, you know, if I'm in Europe or even India or Africa, where I'm dealing with folks whose primary journey is inside the Western church tradition, the challenges are all the same. So that's my life work. Is I'm kind of Erasmus. I'm not outside. You know, I'm inside the church, and I've stayed there, but I'm working for reform all the time. And then those of your listeners who are Enneagram people would see me as a number one. You know, always the reformer.
Okay,
that's just my bent.
Yep, and you got married along the way.
I did. I overmarried. way overmarried. Kathy's a remarkable woman. She's the finest person I know. I mean, she really is. And we've been married 39 years. I don't know what date, or if you're looking at this video, you know, in a century from now, trying to figure out what happened. But this is 2020, and we've been married 39 years. Two great girls. I liked what somebody said, you know, our job as parents, we always thought was not to raise two great children, but to raise two great adults. And, you know, and both of my daughters are Jesus followers, and their husbands are good men. We're very blessed. Four grandbabies. We're good.
Yeah. I think Bill Hybels once said, behind every successful man, there's a woman laughing.
Yeah.
And I think.
Yeah. Well, and Kathy's just such a, oh my goodness, I can't imagine. I mean, she's the grounding. I mean, she's the constant. She's smart. She also has her master's in theology. We met at seminary. Okay. She didn't want to marry a preacher, and I tell her, you know, we always joke about it, well, she didn't marry much of one. And so, you know, she got her wish, and I got way more. We actually met, she cut my hair, so it's a Samson and Delilah. I had hair then. And so I always, it's our Samson and Delilah story, although I don't fit the role of Samson. She doesn't fit the role of Delilah.